Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. And welcome back to home of Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today on this beautiful winter day. I hope you agree. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous day. I wanted to give you a heads up about some other opportunities that are coming your way in the next week or two. Tuesday, February 11th is almost here. The League of Women Voters and the Onondaga Citizens League are co-sponsoring a talk on current immigration issues. And that will be, again, Tuesday, February 11th at the DeWitt Community Library, which is in Shopping Town. The talk starts at 5:30. There are refreshments at 5:15, so you can head out right after work. It's free and open to the public. The panelists are Maxwell Professor of Political Science, Christy Anderson. We know Christy well. And immigration attorneys Diane Chapel Daly and Divya Hoffman. So I highly recommend that to you. It's an issue I'm not sure we're going to be touching on here at the roundtable, so this is a chance to get in on the debate. In a couple of weeks, on February 20th, you remember we started the session, the season, with Vice Admiral, retired Vice Admiral Bob Moret talking about national security issues. He's going to be at the Institute for Retired People, and that's open to really anybody who is, as I always say, retired, semi-retired, or aspiring to be retired, and available in the middle of the day. And that's the Institute for Retired People. That's on February 20th at noon with Bob Moret, who's with the Institute for National Security, talking about national security and the year ahead. That's on February 20th. For those of you who are available today at noon, Jason Smorrell, the new general manager of the Syracuse Chiefs, is going to be at IRP. And so I can tell you more about that. But otherwise, it's on the Institute for Retired People website. Next week, right here at Thursday Morning Roundtable, we're going to be talking with the three co-chairs of the brand new Commission on Government Modernization. As you know, that's been a favorite topic of the roundtable and the Onondaga Citizens League. We now have a funded commission that's being co-chaired by TMR member Catherine Richardson, retired SUNY ESF President Neil Murphy, and former Congressman Jim Walsh. And those three are going to be here next week, so bone up on your government modernization questions. But this morning, we are turning our attention to the arts, and it's my pleasure to welcome and introduce our three panelists, all of whom are new, relatively new, or comebackers to the area. First, Thomas Kazmierczak. Tom is the executive director of the Landmark Theater, which we all know has undergone some great renovations in recent years. Tom comes to us from the Sandusky, Ohio State Theater, before that the Lancaster, New York Opera House, and went to school in Buffalo, so he has some local ties there also. Catherine Underhill is a returning Syracuse native. She lived in Colorado for quite a long time, but she's come back to be the new managing director of the new Symphoria, Central New York's new professional symphony. She was previously with the Colorado Music Festival, and before that with the Dairy Center for the Arts in Boulder. So welcome, Catherine. And then Syracuse native, longtime resident anyway, of Syracuse, Lisa Smith is managing director of the Syracuse Opera. Lisa was most recently the regional vice president from the American Cancer Society, and she will tell you, I'm sure, a little bit more about her background and how she came to the arts from Ramon Beck's Art Run. So I asked the panelists just to tell us a little bit about what is going on in their organizations and what's coming up in the future in their own organizations, and then to turn the conversation a little bit to the arts scene in Syracuse. And so it's going to be informal before we get to questions from the audience, and the audience knows when we get to that point, I'll spot them with the microphone. But right now, I would say, take it away, Thomas.
Sure. Well, it's great to be here, everybody. And at the Landmark Theater, I'll honestly say everything is new. So since the renovation, the old Landmark Theater no longer exists. We're currently doing film series. So many people in Syracuse and the surrounding areas have asked us, it's a movie palace. Please return movies to the theater. So we're working diligently, and there'll be a huge summer film series that will be launched. In addition, a family series, horror movie series, kids series, sci-fi, you name it. So movies return to the big movie palace of Syracuse. In addition, we are working diligently with the Gifford Foundation. We have consultants, and we're changing the entire scope and business plan of the Landmark. So currently, we're changing the entire demographic. So we're adding a family series, a musical series, a concert series, and anything possible. We have now expanded the theater to be host to business meetings, conventions, banquets, weddings, special events, and AXA last week most recently announced their new branding campaign. So we had over 600 people for a business meeting, and it was streamed across the U.S. and Europe right from the Landmark, so all the other offices across the nation would be able to see this meeting at the Landmark. Lastly, we're also currently working with the Visitors and Conventions Bureau, and we're working to have pre-planned seasons 2 years in advance to encourage tourism. Since tourism is one of the big things to bring to Syracuse, we're working with concerts, musicals, plays, dinners, anything possible to lure the tourists. How many people remember downtown Syracuse at the holidays? Okay, what do you remember about that? Lights, people, windows. So now for Christmas or holiday 2014, we're going to be known as Syracuse, USA. We're working diligently. We'll have the night before Christmas and other holiday windows all along Salina and Jefferson, and they're all animated. They've already been attained. We have a decorator that will be working with us. We'll also have competitions. So not only does the Landmark work diligently to bring people into the theater, we're now working to bring the public, you know, outside the theater, that you don't necessarily have to walk into the theater to see that we're vibrant. We are the cornerstone of downtown Syracuse, and we're working to keep the lights on continuously. In addition, we've heard, please, please have tours at the Landmark. We are now working with various architectural groups and historical preservation organizations, and we will have tours continuously at the Landmark. And every first Tuesday, the house is an open house, free to the public, music, fun, and tours. And so get ready for March 4th, because it's Mardi Gras madness at the Landmark. Thank you, everybody.
Sounds like exciting times, doesn't it? That's great. And, you know, I'm, as the new managing director with Symphoria, I'm pleased to say that we are collaborating with the Landmark and with the Opera and many others. Symphoria also has many new things. We're a brand new organization. This is our first full season, having launched in December of 2012. Emerging in the wake of the demise of the SSO, the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra. This is an organization really focused on sustainability and flexibility. And so the Symphoria organization is based as a co-op with musicians at the core, and we've developed five different programming areas, one of which is Spark. We'll be coming to the Westcott Theater this weekend on Saturday to present contemporary composers' work performed by Symphoria musicians paired with electronic music managed by a DJ. And so this is another opportunity for us to move into the community and present music that might be more attractive to a younger audience. We're working with the Palace Theater to do present a performance in May that will focus on innovative film technique and includes a film contest. So we're opening that up to any videographer, filmmaker, any age, any demographic. We welcome all comers, and we have four pieces of music that we're putting on our website that are downloadable, and we're asking for anyone involved in that visual art form to create one or more videos that complement the music that we've posted. And those will be adjudicated by a panel of experts, and then the finalists will be screened in conjunction with our Spark concert at the Palace Theater. And the audience will choose the winners of that, and they will have a small cash honorarium. So that'll be a very interesting concert. This is in addition to the kind of performances that you know and love from your Central New York Orchestra. So we have had very successful programs at the Civic Center, Masterworks on Saturday evenings, Pops performances on Friday evenings. We have a robust children's series that we're also working collaboratively with a number of partners, a school in Lafayette, a school in Liverpool, and the College of Environmental Science and Forestry to present in March a concert that is really focused on music inspired by nature, linking that to our own Central New York environment, particularly with the focus on the revitalization of Onondaga Lake. So that will be, that allows for the intersection of science and music at the middle school level, connecting Symphoria with lots of different organizations and lots of different populations. We are in the middle of generating our season for 14-15, and we'll be announcing that, if all goes according to plan, the latter part of March. We are now happy to have more than 1,300 subscriber households. So from a standing start at December of 2012, we are now a firmly going concern, and it's a very exciting opportunity for all of us. And I hope that if you have not had the opportunity to check out Symphoria, either at Krauss-Heinz Theater or any of the other venues that we're performing in, St. Paul's Cathedral, for example, on Sunday afternoons, I hope that you'll give us a try. I'd be happy to answer any questions when we get to that point. And thanks for having me.
Well, it's terrific to be here. I'm glad everybody came out in this weather. You know, we're Central New Yorkers, and I think people are very hearty. And I saw that last night. You know, we are in production for Maria de Buenos Aires right now. And even with the storm and our phone rang all afternoon wondering if it was canceled, the house was almost full, including about 40 high school kids that came out as part of their Spanish classes and some OCC kids. So it's really great to see that people are supporting the arts, regardless of what genre or venue it is. The one thing that I always think about when I hear opera, as you heard, I do not have a performing arts background. So, you know, I was approached by some board members for the opera and said, you know, would you consider coming in and talking to us? We're looking for a managing director. And I heard the word opera and I went, oh my gosh, no. You know, I've never been to the opera. I don't know anything about the opera. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, some fairly rotund women with peaked hats and screeching. But, you know, I went in. I knew the gentleman in question, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go in and talk to him. It's that time in my life where I feel like I can do more, I can learn more, I can open myself up to new things. And really started meeting the people and talking to the people and really loved what I was hearing and said, okay, you know, if you're willing to take a chance on me, I'm willing to take a chance on you. Well, I started and still hadn't even seen an opera. So that was always the joke walking around. But I did see my first, which was Carmen. I started in September. And it's wonderful. It's fabulous. It's unbelievably touching to listen to the music in a different way, and the voice, whether it's in English or Spanish or French or German, it's a different experience. And, you know, I'm really enjoying it. I still don't know anything about opera. Let's not kid ourselves here. I have a problem sometimes even pronouncing the names of the shows. But I can tell you, we are in right now. We have two more performances, one on Friday and one on Sunday. Matinee, our Sunday matinee is just about sold out. So Maria de Buenos Aires is going on now. Porgy and Bess is coming in April. And then our new season starts in September, which is our 40th year. So we're celebrating 40 years of presenting opera to the Central New York community. And we're kicking that off with The Fledermaus by Strauss. Our midwinter show will be A Little Night Music by Sondheim, and then end the season with Barber of Seville. So if you haven't been to the opera, I encourage you to pick one of them and come. I think if you come, you know, if you're not an opera lover, you don't think you'd like it, try that midwinter one of A Little Night Music, because it's more musical, although it's going to be sung by opera singers. And Sinfonia plays at all of our shows. So we are partners with Sinfonia. We don't have our own musicians. We don't have our own singers. We use the Syracuse Chorus locally. We bring people in from all over the country. We do have our own conductor here, who is also our artistic director. So there's a lot going on. But as you've heard from each of us, you know, you can't look at that art form independently. You know, we're all here to increase and benefit the enrich the quality of life of Central New York. And I think everyone in the room would agree that art plays such a very, very important part. And we all participate, as do other people in the room, on different councils, art councils, cultural councils. And we're working together probably the first time in many, many years where we've realized we can't make it by ourselves any longer. We can't be so focused on what we do and making our payroll and, you know, keeping our doors open without the help of everyone. So we are working together. You know, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, for instance, is a very dynamic partner with all of us because, as you heard, tourism is such an important piece of our Syracuse culture, and we have to keep increasing that. And we are trying to become a destination for people's travels, for their entertainment, for their vacations. And you can't do that without arts and culture. So we are working together, trying to come up with different things that we can collaborate with. You know, Syracuse Opera collaborates with Everson and the Historic Association and a variety of different things. You may have read, we've got some very good press over Maria de Buenos Aires that's going on right now, but our lead singer is from Colombia, and we had her go to La Casita, which is on the west side, and talk to aspiring young dancers, Latino American dancers, and young girls and boys, and she talked about her culture and how important she had to embrace who she is, and that's what made her successful. And it's a great way for us to connect into the community. So everything we do, we want to do the same thing with Porgy and Bess and get into some of the different organizations so children can look at people that have become successful, embrace their culture, embrace their heritage, and really made something of themselves. So I think that's another important piece that arts play in the community. I could go on and on and on. I'm just going to stop talking. However, the one thing I do want everyone in the room to understand is there's so much going on that you can't possibly keep your finger on it. So CNY Arts has an online calendar. So I encourage everyone to bookmark it or go to it as much as possible, and you will see everything that's going on at different places, and I encourage you to please support that art form wherever it is, whether it's museums or cultural events or music events or the Landmark or anything, the zoo. There's so much going on, and we all need your support and encouragement to survive. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thomas, you mentioned Gifford, and Lisa, you mentioned CNY Arts, and so I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what's happening, what's coming out of the efforts. We heard, maybe a year or more ago, about the Ideas Collaborative and the assessment, kind of region-wide assessment that was going on about arts and their role in economic development, and I know that probably most of us took part in a survey more recently about the arts and how we perceive the arts, use the arts, what we would like to see. I know that there's a report coming out soon. Stephen Butler couldn't be here today, but could you talk about that whole collaborative idea and what's coming out of what you learned and going forward, what you anticipate?
You want to take a sip? I'll give it a go. Okay, so we are all new, so some of that work, I think, was done before any of us were here. My understanding is that this is a long initiative really designed to generate data and information that will help shape a regional cultural plan. And I know Steve is working on that, and his team will be producing a report in April. But one of the things that I know has come out of it is a closer intersection and increased communication among the cultural organizations in the region, which, as Lisa said, is to everyone's benefit. The more we can collaborate, the better. And the more we know about the impact of our sector on the economy of the region, excuse me, the more effective we can be as well. So as that is one piece of it, not the entire puzzle.
Well, and adding to that, we were just at a meeting the other day and had some discussion with Stephen Butler, who runs CNY Arts. And, you know, I'm not shirking it. We don't have all the answers yet. But the positive thing about it is that the group that we're in, usually we're creating our action plan now and had a lot of ideas and really talked through it and realized we weren't necessarily on the same page with what Stephen and his group are collecting and gathering from the public, and had to stop and say, you know, we need to address this in the correct way. So I've put a couple things on hold and are reassessing, because it is a collaboration. We have to work together. The tourism is so important. The culture is so important. And, we're really gearing up to do that. The interesting thing, of course, is watching where people, you know, from the calendar or anything else, they can track, you know, where people's interests are. You know, no surprise, people are looking for very family-oriented events to attend and free events to attend. And, you know, we have to pay attention to that. You know, we all have our core business, but we also have to offer up a lot more of free or no, you know, little or no cost events that people can participate in as well. So we're hearing that. We're taking that into consideration. We're watching the age change of supporters for different art forms. So all of this is coming out of the survey. And, when Steve is finished, when the CNY Arts is finished, I strongly encourage you to have him come. It will be very worthwhile. There's a lot of good information coming out.
And in addition, a big strength of the whole process is community building. Community building amongst the arts organizations to get communication going and to strive, you know, with our same demographics and stretch our horizons amongst the arts organizations, but most importantly, working with the culturals for the sense of community, such as the Landmark has always been known as a sense of community, but the sense of community must be within the theater, within the community, with the individuals that attend, and amongst the arts organizations. So we're striving not just internally, but externally to build the community that surrounds our organizations.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to direct this question to Tom, because he mentioned 600 people there for a meeting. But I think the problem relates to any of these three good little stores just recently closed in the Armory Square area, all mentioned parking as a problem. Larry Leatherman would tell you, and he probably has, that one of the problems with the most is parking. The other problem I have, I walk by that block. I come from Clinton Street down to the Aspen Gym twice or three times a week. I never have done that without being accosted by one or two people. It was two this week, asking for money. It used to be, do you have any spare change? Now it's, do you have a dollar? And I think a lot of people find that threatening. So the combination, I can't park and I'm threatened, makes people say, I'm just not going to come downtown. Well, what do you say to that?
Coming from the area that I came from, yes, I experienced it on day one. So we're working with the local organizations. We're also working with the businesses that surround us. We're working with the downtown committee. We're being very vocal. And one thing that has helped around the Landmark, because it was much worse when I first arrived, if you start to look at the Landmark now, you need to look at the outside. You need to look at the block. The lights are on now. It's not dark at night. So a lot of that has ceased. During the daytime, I'll be very honest, I go right up to them and talk to them. A lot of them have disappeared. So they've asked us, you know, for money. We tried to find out some of their situations. Some of their situations are dire, and some of them are panhandlers. Those that were dire, we've gotten help. We've worked with the various charitable organizations to discuss issues that are going around the landmark. So we went right out into the community to find out what is going on. When it comes to the parking issue, it is an issue, but if you look next door and if you read in the newspapers, the Sibley's Building's parking lot may become open, so that will work. I met Monday with a committee who's looking at parking, so we're discussing that. And to attest to your information, I have a young family, so when we arrived, my wife and baby were accosted, you know, when we were thinking of living downtown. However, you have to look at, you know, the different aspects that happen with that, and you have to look beyond that. It happens in every city. It happens more in other cities than here, and it's just an issue to move forward. And as a group, I think that whole issue will disappear. How's that?
Can I also
sure.
chime in on that? Sorry, just the issue of parking, I think, is an interesting one for all of us who offer programming downtown. I will say that one of the things that Symphoria has done is to provide a free shuttle from the Shoppingtown parking lot, which Shoppingtown has been very cooperative, and we appreciate that. We're working with the CAS limo service to provide two big buses that come downtown in conjunction with all of our performances for the Masterworks series and the Pop series. So all of them that are presented in the Krauss Heinz Theater. And we hope to be able to expand that next year and provide some free busing from other sectors of the community. And that's a fundraising opportunity if anyone would like to speak with me about that. Thanks.
Thank you. John, you had
yes.
a question.
Lisa, you are a new opera fan. What is your strategy to get the first-time opera person to come and see one of the performances?
That is a great question, and we have, and I have given it a lot of thought. I think we had some changes last year, created a season that wasn't traditional, and our traditional subscribers voted with their lack of purchasing subscriptions. And anyone that knows how the art world works, especially in performing arts, you know, you're lost without your diehard subscription buyers. So, you know, we tried to get a little edgy. We tried to do things a little differently, tried to save some money, and it showed and hurt us tenfold. You know, it wasn't just, you know, the money we saved on the productions, we lost five times over. So, you know, coming in, I started in September. So, you know, I do not have the performing arts background, but I do have a business and marketing background. So the first thing I did is really looked at where are we and what are we doing and how are we going to get out of this. So the best thing to do is to make our long-term supporters and our loyal people happy with a season that works for them. Now, if you look at opera lovers and our subscription buyers specifically are an older crowd. The people that are coming, to your point, are much, much younger, and they get younger and younger every day. Our medium age is now, you know, moving towards like 36, where it used to be 55. It was our average. So we are attracting younger people to the art form. But subscriptions, you know, somebody that buys the whole season is considered a subscription buyer. So, you know, they tend to still be a little older. So we need to address that and bring back, you know, the opera that they love. Maybe not the, I'll say stodgy because you guys already know. All right. So, you know, a little, you know, the heavier operas, not necessarily bring those back, but the operas that people still know and love, which is why we brought the Fledermaus and Barbara Seville. But knowing that also is those people are often snowbirds and aren't here in the winter. So we still have the opportunity to do something different in this mid-season. So we have our two anchors this year coming up in the Big House, you know, in the Krauss Heinz Theater. two nights, a matinee and an evening, both, for both productions. But that middle production is going to be, as I said, more of a musical, five nights, smaller house, so that we can really attract people that are hearing about it, thinking, I'll go to that. The people that have been coming to Maria, the Buenos Aires, has been a completely different group of people, which is terrific. However, as I said, we upset our subscription holders, so we still haven't had them. So as soon as we announced our new season, the first group that can buy, it's not open to the general public until March 1st, our subscriptions are coming in like crazy because our people are coming back and saying, you heard us, you know what we like, you're giving us what we like, and we're going to support you. So that was the first step of really making, we need to pay for the art. So bringing the subscription buyers in is most important. And then we work on the second. So, and there are some things that we want to do. There's one show in particular that was going to be in our season, and we decided not to because it was too edgy, and it's called Glory Denied. It's about the last POW that came out of Vietnam. It's a very intense, fantastic show, but it's too intense for the general public. It's something you really need to see. So we're going to do those types of things to bring in new people, new funding, but use other venues outside of the Civic Center, perhaps the Landmark, the Red House, and that way we'll be engaging new people as well. So that is our marketing strategy for the next season and going forward.
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, just to piggyback on that, I think like the opera, symphony can also be perceived as less compelling to younger people, those who are not familiar with the art form. And so one of the things that Symphoria has done is, with the support of a generous donor, initiated a new program to make sure that we are mitigating whatever barriers may exist to inviting people in to give us a try. So particularly with regard to younger people, we're offering a free ticket to anybody 18 and younger for anything that we're doing all season long. And we're offering a $5 ticket to anything that we're doing for anyone that has a college ID, any age. So if you're in college, doing whatever you're doing in college, $5 ticket for anything that we're doing. That with our free shuttle, these are all steps that we're taking to address exactly the kinds of issues that Lisa was talking about, that we need to bring people in, because my feeling is once they experience what we offer and the excitement of live orchestral performance, they'll come back.
And I'd like just to add, we're working with Syracuse University and the fraternities and sororities. And the fraternity Alpha Phi Omega jumped on and asked, what would you like us to do? We have over 300 members. They're assisting us in the office. They're assisting us at events. They're assisting us with marketing. They're our guerrilla street campaign group hanging posters. They're attending our events, and they're thrilled. And they're assisting us also with social media. And once their pictures appeared on our Facebook, many other fraternities and sororities from Syracuse start calling saying, why can't we help? So it was a great cause, and we're moving diligently with them, and it's very exciting. They're thrilled. A new energy is brought into the Landmark with them, and it's even attending concerts and events. All of a sudden now, not just volunteering, they faced us, this Facebooked us this morning saying they're buying tickets to Caputo, they're buying tickets to the upcoming shows.
That's great.
And so it's a great, opportunity.
Great. Thank you.
A few years ago, the Onondaga Citizens League did a study in downtown Syracuse. And one thing that's pretty sure fact is that there's more than enough parking downtown. What is also a sure fact is nobody knows where it is. And another fact is nobody in this community has the political will to demand a parking plan, signage that makes sense, streets going the right direction so you can get to the parking spot and to the venue you want to attend. So I suggest that if you really care about audiences downtown, that there be a subcommittee of the arts to tackle the mayor and the parking issue. Thank you.
Okay. I don't think that was a question, really. But, okay, so you're going to do that next. But that introduced... That introduced the subject of Onondaga Citizens League studies, mm-hmm. and you all are new. You might not know about this, but several years even before the downtown study, we did, chaired by Fred Fisk, a study on the state of the arts. And a lot of the, some of the things you're talking about, in particular the collaboration, that was the big deal then in 2002, I believe. And so I think you've come a long way. Another issue was also kind of getting the word out. And that was before websites became as important and, you know, other social media as they are now. It sounds like you're going in that direction, but I'm going to, you know, ask you, you know, if you had your druthers, what other, you know, what help could you get or what do you need to get the word out more? Another thing, of course, was funding and a stable funding for the arts, and the county funding has come back a little bit, but I'm not exactly sure where that stands. At the time, we had heard there were going to be a bunch of new hotels someplace north of 690, and we thought there would be a lot more hotel tax that we could tap into. That hasn't happened yet. But another thing that we suggested was a school, I think it was a performing arts middle school, going to what some of you have talked about, that you know, trying to develop that. And I thought I'd heard recently something about a charter school. So, you know, these issues of getting the word out, funding, and again, driving, you know, particularly at the level where we know that schools are strapped and they can't spend a lot of money on the arts. You don't have to address all three, but, you know, pick one.
I'll go.
I'll give it a shot. I am familiar with the studies. And, you know, I think when you talk to any of us in the field, you know, we all agree that we need to increase funding. We all agree that we need to get the word out. We all agree that we need to engage children in a different way. So, yeah, we agree with all of that. What the answers are, I think I'll talk specifically about children. You know, we have spent a lot of time, especially the places, the arts and culture that have bricks and mortar, of how to get children into the museums, into the shows, not necessarily to the opera. We're very fortunate that we can go to them, usually with a couple of singers. We have a resident artist program that's every fall, and we actually go into the schools and can go to them. All we really need is a piano or a keyboard. But for many of these other organizations, it's so very important. And really, you know, when you look at the kids that can participate, you know, it's the schools that you're not necessarily thinking those children, you know, all children need to be encouraged to participate in the arts. But, you know, look at the city schools and the kids that are least likely to be able to afford to do anything. Those are the children that we cannot get into the museums and the art forms and the performances. And the biggest holdup, honestly, is buses. The schools cannot afford to pay for the buses. We just talked about it the other day. I think it's $300 a bus to get, and what, you know, it's been a while. I know they're smaller. I think you can put 60 kids on a bus or whatever it is. So think about that. You know, it's something as simple as that. If we could come up as a community that we agree that this is so important that we could fund buses to have kids go to Syracuse Stage or the Everson or the Most or, you know, the Historic Association or any of those places. And I'm saying this not because I work at Syracuse Opera. I'm saying this because I live here and it's just so very important. And that's the kind of thing that we need to come together as a community to figure out, because that's our future, guys. You know, those kids really need to be encouraged to participate in culture and arts.
Okay, let's see. One of the issues that we spoke about at the meeting of cultural leaders that happened earlier this week was the need to collaborate with the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And there was a very interesting study that was done through them and through Center State CEO with regard to barriers to economic development. And as a person who grew up here but lived away for a long time, it was particularly intriguing to me. And a lot of the message in that, and also in the breakfast that was hosted by Center State CEO a couple weeks ago, is this notion of perception. And Lisa made the point, which I think is a great one, that we really need to celebrate all the things that this community has to offer. And it's a huge array. There's an amazing amount of things for people to do. So as a community, with regard to marketing and branding, I think it would be hugely beneficial if we could tout that more. I mean, my family is going to be moving here from Colorado this summer, and I'm wanting to engage them in all of the things that I'm excited about. And so the more we can, as a community, be forward-thinking about celebrating what makes Syracuse unique, and the arts and culture opportunities is part of that. Architecture is certainly part of it. I think that has a lot to do with it. It's a very walkable city, but I don't see as many people walking as I would expect. That would help mitigate the parking issue as well. With regard to funding, I would say we're probably all looking at maximizing funding from diverse sources. That's, you know, that is the road forward. I think reducing our reliance on any particular source, ensuring that we have a broad base of support, both in with regard to the city and regionally for us. We perform more than 50 times a year within Onondaga County many times, but we also travel as far as Jamestown and Rome, Cortland, and Oswego. So part of that is just to get the word out that this is a great opportunity for people. And I guess as far as bringing kids in, I agree. The issue with bringing city school kids in is critical and something that we've recently created an education and outreach committee, and we are working directly with educators across Onondaga County particularly to try to generate solutions to that problem. I've been going to the Onondaga County Music Educators Association meetings and meeting and talking with music educators from high schools, middle schools, and elementary schools. And they have some ideas as well. So we're hoping to be able to collaborate with them to help address that issue. Although I would second the idea that busing seems to be a big challenge.
In every city I worked in, busing has always been the big challenge. But currently we're working with national children's organizations and companies, theater companies, to work on a family series and a children's school time series. So we're working with American Theater and various organizations that will now instill a school time series. Busing is an issue for some districts, especially in the city. It's not a big issue with the ones that we're working with in the suburbs. And nationally, and it's, you know, unfounded, everyone now is looking at, you know, testing. The kids can't leave the schools because of testing. Recess has been taken away from testing. But if you do all the research, the highest scores in the standardized testing come out of the performing arts schools. So that test results came out of a school in Columbus, Ohio, and it was unfounded. They had the highest standardized test scores, and it was from performing arts schools. So that's a notion that the arts is very important in the math, in the science. And in addition, we've talked to the schools, and we're working on bringing educational programs, classes, theater education, acting, music, all that would be at the Landmark in our new utilized spaces that are not only for dressing rooms but would be studios. And so we're changing the scope already of what the building is and what it can be. When it comes to funding, we're looking at diversified sources, and most especially we're working now with our new board members on new lines of revenue. So instead of just, you know, we're doing a show, we're getting tickets, we're getting money from tickets and patrons, we're getting bar sales, we're looking diligently on those new revenue streams. Some of them no one would have looked at before, but now we are. And then lastly, it's the creativity and, like you said, the believing in the area. I'm not from Syracuse. I didn't have to come to Syracuse. But when I arrived in Syracuse, there was a passion with the people that I met, beautifulness with the architecture, and a buzz. So we hooked up immediately with a new local organization called Believe in Syracuse. And so we're like being cheerleaders. We're having special events with them. They're sponsoring some of our events. But if you look around the room, or if you look around society, or if you look in downtown Syracuse, and you're out there smiling and waving, people are like, what's wrong with him? What's going on at the Landmark? He has a smile on his face, so he's hiding something. He has a smile on his face. Why would you be smiling? And it comes that down to believing. My family has moved here and is moving here. I wouldn't want them coming to a city that people are frowning in. I wouldn't want them coming to a city that they're scared to walk down the street in. So, it, you know, you start to change your little area. You do what is necessary, and then soon you're doing the impossible. And that's one of our mottos and one of our goals in the arts and at the Landmark.
I just want to quickly add that one of the things that came out of a survey of people that travel into the community is that they talk about Syracuse University, our weather, and how friendly people are in Syracuse. Those are the three.
Yeah.
My question is for Catherine. I was wondering if you could speak to what efforts are being made to recapture the SSO subscribers.
Well, we have been able to retrieve some information from the previous database, not all of it. And so before I came on board, efforts had been made to reach out with letters and offers to try to entice previous subscribers to check out Symphoria. We have been successful in our first annual donor campaign. We were able to engender support from a broad base of both former and new subscribers and ticket buyers. And I think part of it is just increasing the visibility of Symphoria in the common consciousness, if you will. I think people who appreciate orchestral music should know that Symphoria exists and give us a try. We've had amazing reviews, great performances, and my hope is that those who are interested in it and sad about the demise of the former organization will come to Symphoria and enjoy orchestral music again.
Hi, my question and comment is for Lisa on the end. And forgive me if you've already done this. I agree with the traditionalist view of getting the diehards and not making people angry and keeping that money from coming in. Opera, once you're hooked, you're hooked. You have to get young people where it's most dramatic. You especially, if you listen to El Lucero Van La Stella or Que Gelida Manina, Nessun Dorma, The Vincero, at the end of that, people just jump up and start. Yeah, I mean, it makes your heart pound. Once you're hooked, you're hooked. So every season, could we get one show that you get all the great performers and you sing all the great arias? Because if you keep people on a high like that, every single season, it bombards their senses. I guarantee you, you'll hook them for life. Have you already done something like that?
Well, you had my head spinning with all those words. So my first question is, are you a subscriber? All right, well, you need to be, and I'm not going to rest until you are. All right, but to your point, yes, I understand completely. I think when you see the lineup for the Fledermaus, which kicks off our 40th season, during the gala ball, that's part of the show. We are actually bringing back some of our star performers that have performed over the last 40 years to sing what they are known for, not what is in the show. So to your point, I'm so glad I could say, yes, we are doing that. So I expect you to be there. I see your face. I'm going to find out your name. And I expect that. So, yes, I do understand that. I think the idea of bringing it, all of the operas we're doing next year are very happy. You know, people die in opera all the time. It's very tragic. You know, we're trying to be very happy and, you know, change the light a little bit to do exactly what you're saying, to bring people in. You know, bringing children in, bringing high schoolers in. We also, $10. If you have a student's ID, whether it's college or high school, it's $10, period. That's it. No matter what show it is, and we are working with the schools to do that as well, to get a taste for, you know, give them a taste for something different. So I hear you. Yes. So I'll see you at the Fledermaus. Okay, great.
Can I just say that nobody dies at the symphony? So
wait a minute. The symphony plays at the opera. So there you go.
My question is a follow-on to the comments about SSO to the Symphoria.
Yes.
We're all very excited and want to see Symphoria be so successful, and we're aware of the problems with SSO. My question is, now that you've passed an anniversary, have you achieved your financial objectives for that period of time? And if you have, you mentioned firm footing, you're on a firm footing, but have you achieved your financial goals that were laid out in your business plan for that period of time? And if you could comment on that, and if that's the case, to what do you attribute your success, financial success compared to the reason for the demise of SSO? I hope that makes sense.
Yes, I think it does make sense. Thank you. To answer the first part of your question, I would say yes, we have achieved our immediate goal, which is to craft an organization that is sustainable and demonstrates its sustainability by operating in the black. We are operating in the black at the moment and anticipate that we will end this fiscal year, which is a September to August fiscal year, achieving the budgeted goals. It's a little tricky because we are a brand new organization, so crafting those goals was part of a collaborative effort with board, musicians, and staff. And we are on track. Our ticket sales have exceeded expectations. Our subscriptions have exceeded expectations. I have much work to do in creating relationships with the business community since I, too, just started in September. I think there's a lot of opportunity for growth there. And there is certainly more to do in fundraising in general. In terms of why we're on solid footing, and again, we're a startup, so we're small at the moment. And I think for us to be sustainable over the long term, we do need to grow. We have a very small staff, which is not going to be functional for the long term. But we're trying to be right-sized, and I think the former organization had a staff of 17. We have a staff of 6. Our budget is approximately, let's see if I can do the math, it's about 30% of what was. And I think we're trying to figure out what the best balance is to be able to generate the necessary revenue to produce the quality of music that our audience wants and to retain professional musicians who will commit to being part of the organization. Part of our success at the moment, I think, also is derived from the fact that we are structured as a co-op. And so the musicians are the core of the organization. They are the committed group that really has skin in the game, if you will. And so the flexibility and responsiveness of our structure is integral to that co-op, and the musicians are part of the decision-making process in terms of the strategic plan, in terms of our long-range vision, and in terms of our near-term programming structure, et cetera. So I think the integration of the musicians into the business paradigm is a key part of this, and our flexibility and responsiveness is also a critical component.
Thank you. You had a question, Elizabeth?
Actually, thank you. I'm Elizabeth Daly. I'm director of Onondaga County Public Library, and I haven't met Catherine and Lisa, which is why I'm saying that. But I wanted to make sure to say library. The library, of course, is a huge supporter of the arts, educating children and families. And one of our roles is we are eligible for certain grants, for example, mm-hmm. and we use them to enrich the lives of our children by doing things like bringing the symphony into libraries, bringing an opera preview into the library. We recently had an event at the Landmark, again grant-funded, but we bring it back to the community. So, and one role that we have that hasn't been mentioned is every library has gallery space, basically. So local artists are highlighted every single month in all our libraries in 32 sites in Onondaga County. So that wasn't a question, except I could ask you, do you want to continue this lovely collaboration with the library?
Thank you, Elizabeth. I knew she was going to do that, so that's all right.
And the answer is yes, definitely.
All right. One more comment.
I don't mean to speak for the art and cultural industry, of course, but as a member of that industry, I just want to say it's very refreshing to hear the things that that I've heard this morning, particularly with regard to diversification of revenue stream, a more business approach to managing nonprofit organizations. I know these three people. We work with these three people. We all belong to the same industry. I urge all of you to support each of them. A rising tide floats all boats. And I want to welcome you to the community and to the industry. We all look forward to working with you and collaborating with you and building your audiences.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I want to remind everybody about WCNY, of course, another cultural institution, which has recorded this session, which can be heard on Sunday at 8 p.m., WCNY-FM, and thereafter on their website, WCNY.org, so recommend it to all your friends. And thank you very much, Tom Kazmierek, Catherine Underhill, Lisa Smith, for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.